Accession number 21613, Reel 2.
I'm interested to talk to you about the equipment that you were given. Did you at any time feel as though it was inadequate?
No, because I don't think we had enough experience to know that. We really only had 303 rifles, and we had some Bren guns, but not a lot. I think we had a mortar platoon at that time. Yes, we did. But I don't know that they had very much either. So the equipment we had was pretty inadequate, really. I mean, even when we arrived at Tobruk, our equipment was fairly inadequate. I mean, we defended a lot of Tobruk with just using reconstructed Italian guns, which they managed to fire without sight.
Yeah. I'm interested to talk about that, because I've spoken to people who said that they were using basically the equipment that had been left over from the First World War.
Yes, well, you see, and we used a lot. We laid a tremendous lot of mines. When the Germans actually came to the outskirts of Tobruk, there was a tremendous movement to get all these mines laid. We laid a lot of mines. And I think we were lucky enough to bluff the Germans when they arrived at Tobruk, thinking we were much stronger than we really were.
We'll talk about that later too. I'm interested to discuss with you, how long it was that you were in training for, roughly.
I'll probably give you that. I told you that we sailed to Egypt from the Suez Canal to the Suez Canal in New Zealand. I better tell you a little bit about that, because New Zealand was an absolute hell ship. She'd been made to carry about 25 passengers up to the Dutch East Indies, and on board we had, I suppose, nearly about 2,000 troops. And we all slept down below deck, and actually I can remember sleeping in the hold, and there was a huge, great big urn in the middle, in which this Dutch cook, used to cook porridge. And it was as hot as Hades, and he'd be leaning over it, and all the perspiration would drip off his head into the porridge. You could see it. And we used to have breakfast. We had to line up for breakfast on the decks, and all the open sewerage used to go past on one side where you were going to get your food. It was all going through the scuppers. It wasn't good. It was terrible. But of course they wouldn't risk the big ships then any further on than Colombo. And that wasn't a very good ship. But we didn't do much training on the ship, I can tell you.
Can't be much space for anything.
No, it was terrible. Well, I just put might be.
So you were training in Northern for how long, roughly?
We were formed in July, and in July 1940, and we left and trained for Fremantle to board the ship on the 3rd of the 1st, 41. And we arrived at El Majal, near Gaza in Palestine, on 2nd of February 1941.
Before you did actually board a ship, did you get time to see friends and relatives? Were you given leave from
the camp? Yes. Oh yes, we got leave to see our family before we went. Yes, we did. We used to get some weekend leave. In that time we were at Northam.
Did you ever consider that the war might be over by the time you hadn't even completed your training? Were there hopes that the war would be over before you actually left?
There were hopes, but I don't think anybody thought it would be. No. I don't think we ever thought it was going to last as long as it did, but I don't think anybody thought we wouldn't get there in time to be in it. But you were asking me about what we had in training. We only had a minor equipment upgrade. And then we entrained to Mursa Matru in Egypt and were trucked to Tobruk. We arrived there for garrison duty, mind you. That's what we arrived there for, I'm telling you. And training on the 26th of the 3rd, 41. 24th Brigade, which then didn't have the 2nd 32nd Battalion, which what we hadn't arrived, was told on the 1st of the 4th, 41, to prepare for a German advance. So the 2nd 28th and 2nd 43rd Battalions who were there, each man some 16,000 yards, about 14.5 kilometres, of the old Italian-built concrete bunker lines. At that time, we had no transport, Bren gun carriers, heavy machine guns, mill grenades or mortars, none of those things. They cannibalised from captured Italian suppliers a few Lucchesia diesels, the Guzzi motorcycles, 75mm World War I guns without sights and similar improvised
equipment. We should mention that you're reading from what?
I'm reading from notes on an outline of the 2nd 28th Battalion's history.
Okay.
Which I think may be helpful because it's accurate.
Sure, yeah. Not a problem. I'm interested, before we go on in depth to your time at Tobruk, to discuss what it felt like to finally be leaving Western Australia. The day had finally arrived.
Well, the day we left, I can always remember that night. My father, of course, was in shipping, and he had a lot to do with the senior officers and the captain on the Aquitania and the other ships, and he came out on a barge night to see us off. And I can still remember standing at this where this big side of the ship was open, and seeing him go off in the light and I felt very lonely. It was the last time last contact was Perth. And yes, you really did feel you were leaving home. It was a bit sad.
This would have been the first time you left the country, I presume.
Oh yes, it was. Yes.
What were the feelings at the final farewell? What was the atmosphere on the wharf before you were shipped out?
I think it was a bit sad on the wharf, of course, because a lot had young families they were saying goodbye to. I think probably the younger ones of us were really looking forward to the adventure, but I think the older married ones were probably realising, they were leaving behind. And of course we were away for 2 years, we didn't come back for 2 years. So, I think it was a mixture of excitement and sorrow. And
did your father give you any advice at all?
No, I don't think he ever told me, gave me any advice at all. He was just wished us all the best and good luck. And because I was the youngest of six children, I was 9 years younger than the brother I was going away with.
We haven't mentioned his name, I don't think.
My brother was Alan, a brother Alan, yes. He was 9 years older than I was.
So he was... In his middle 20s.
Yes, he was.
Was that fairly old for a chap heading off to war?
No, I was older than that. Somewhere in their 30s. Oh, yes. No, there were a lot of young ones in their 20s, of course. There were those in their 30s too. In fact, some in their 40s. So, no. There would have been, I should think the majority probably would have been between 20 and 30. But a lot of officers, the senior officers would have been older than that.
Was your mother there to see you off as well?
Yes, she came to the wharf, yes, when we were there, yeah. But they couldn't get in onto the wharf, but we were able to go over and talk to them. She was there. Yes. With a friend for support.
Must have been quite a difficult sort of day.
Yes, it was.
In light of what was happening.
Yes, it was. Because We knew we were going to the other side of the world. We didn't know when we'd ever see our families again. And I think even the youngest of them thought of that.
I'm interested, you mentioned that you saw your father leaving in the light.
Yes.
And feeling very lonely. Was there ever a time that you considered that you might never return?
No. Don't think I ever did. I've always been a sort of confident person. I don't think I ever thought that I wouldn't return. I think at that age you think you're indestructible, don't you? No, I don't think. There were later times when I did, but not at that time. I didn't at that time, but there were later times when I thought I would never return. Many times.
Yeah, we can talk about those too. Yeah. So, leaving West Australian waters, seeing the west coast disappear over the horizon.
Well, it was sort of we sailed in the night, of course. Mm. So you really only just saw the lights.
The lights vanish.
Yeah. Yes, it was a big convoy then. Had the Queen Mary in it and some other ships. But we weren't in a danger area really in those days, not a very dangerous area of course, until you got to, say, Colombo.
Were you being told exactly where you were being taken?
No. No, not at all. Didn't know where we were going.
Did you have any idea of the stage of the war in North Africa at the time?
No. No, we didn't. No.
So you were sent to Colombo. What were some of the sights you saw on the way to Colombo?
What, when we arrived there?
I'm assuming because you had never been on the open sea before, what was the feeling like?
Oh, it was sort of fascinating to see all the other ships around us and the destroyers, you know, circling around, all that sort of thing. But we tried to sleep up on deck as much as we could because, of course, no air conditioning, and the ships were very hot. You didn't have much air down below deck.
What were you sleeping on, or what were you expected to sleep on below?
Oh, some slept just on the floor. Others had bunks. They'd converted a lot of. Although the Aquitaine at that stage hadn't really been stripped for all the officers' part where the officers were, there was still all beautiful furnishings still in the staterooms. But later, of course, they stripped all those off. But at that stage, they hadn't. And we were just down below decks. Sleeped on the passageways anyway you could find somewhere to put your head. But they didn't have bunks for everybody.
How did you keep up morale on board ship?
Oh, I suppose we played cards and talked a lot. Did one thing and another like that, you know, filling the time.
Give us an idea of the average day on board ship.
Oh, well, he got woken up and everybody had got ready, showered and whatnot, and then breakfast, and then we'd have a roll call on the deck, and PT and all those sort of things, you know. And I think we did have some instruction, but we really didn't have anything to be instructed in. You know, there's a limit to what you can do with learning about a 303 rifle.
What did the PT involve?
Mainly keeping it fit. Oh, you know, running on the spot and all that sort of thing. Because there's not a lot of room, of course. General PT exercises. They had some PT instructors on, of course, used to take us through it. But it's a pretty boring sort of a time. Yeah. But the trip to Colombo was not that long. Then when we got on the other ship, that was the worst part. The other part was very unpleasant. Fortunately, my family had friends in Colombo, so while we were there, we did get some leave, got ashore, and they looked after us very well. We had hot baths and a few servants standing around handing towels and things like that, which was quite a shock after a troop ship. Yeah. But that was really, you know, all we ever did.
Did you sort of at this point see, to what extent did you see the whole trip as an adventure?
Oh, I think we thought most of it as an adventure at that time, definitely. Ones of my age did, yeah. It was a big adventure to see the world.
What did you think of Colombo?
Oh, it was lovely in those days. It was really, really was a lovely place. You know. Oh, yes, lovely. I enjoyed it a few days we were there. It's not quite the same today, I don't think. No, I thoroughly enjoyed Colombo. And it was all a matter of transferring from the ships into the onto these other ships.
I'm interested to know, you mentioned that there wasn't much room on board ship.
Mm.
Keeping up morale, were there things like concerts that were performed on
any of the ships at all? Yeah, I think, yes, there were some concerts, you know, which fellows who had their musical instruments with them used to give, but nothing very much.
So how...
A little bit of a sing-song and that sort of thing.
How long were you on board ship before you actually got to Colombo, and then...
Oh, I don't know what it would have been then. I might have the date that we arrived in Colombo here, I don't know. I think the time from Fremantle to Colombo would have been something under a week. But I can't just remember how many days it was.
So you were in Colombo for a couple of days, then...
Yes, then we...
Did you have any idea at this stage where you were being sent?
No. It was all kept under wraps.
So you were then put on board this small ship,
yeah.
Sent off.
Yeah.
Where were you heading at this point, do you know?
Well, we weren't actually told until we actually got... really to the Suez Canal, and of course we knew where we were. And
what feelings went through your mind when you knew you were heading for the Middle East, and ultimately North Africa?
Oh, I thought it was going to be very interesting.
So what were some of the sights you saw going through the Suez Canal?
Oh, well, there were all of the villages, and of course it's an amazing thing really going through the canal, because you've really got, on one side you've got more or less desert going out, and if you're on the land there looking back, it looks like ships going through the desert, you know. But you used to see the native dhows and all that sort of thing, towns along the canal, but nothing really terribly exciting.
What about the precautions that the ship was taking on its way?
Oh, well, of course there were, they used to zigzag, the ships used to zigzag, and they'd go for so many, and it all was all erratic, and they never went on a straight line. That was the main precaution. Of course, the escorts were there all the time patrolling. But and lights were out, of course. So that was another thing that made it so hot, because everything was sort of sealed up. And they were the main precautions: no lights. And during the daylight, you could see the convoys, how they used to move and put off the submarines.
So approaching the Middle East, what were your feelings? An appropriate noise. What were the feelings of, we're getting closer to...
Yes, I think everybody felt like that, and they're all very eager to get ashore and get into it, I think. Get off the ships start doing something. Of course, nobody quite realised that they really didn't know much of the background of what was happening. The ordinary troops didn't know much at all. I don't even know how much our commanding officers knew of what was going on at that stage. I wouldn't know. I fancy that they didn't know a tremendous lot until they actually landed and went ashore and were probably taking them for briefing. But we just wanted to get on with it, really.
Okay, so tell us about the arrival, what it was like to actually disembark in this foreign land.
Oh, it was good. We went by train to Palestine, and then from into camp there, and then it was from Palestine that we went to Rook. We were at the first camp. I think we got here our first camp. We're at Gaza for the first part of our time, and they were quite good camps. We had lots.
Did you see much of the villages and the town?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
What sorts of things did you witness?
Little bit of leave. Well, of course, the Arabs were all, you know, mostly Arabs, and we also had some contact with the kibbutzes. And we got a little bit of leave to Jerusalem, places like that. Short leaves.
What was it like seeing these places after having grown up in sleepy old Perth?
Oh, wonderful! Yeah. Of course, it was not like it would be today. You know, the kibbutzes were mostly manned by all sorts of people, professionals, and, you know, they could have been anything, judges, professionals, all working just as labourers in those days. So they were pretty interesting places. But, we had some good leaves, quite a bit of fun.
What sort of things would you get up to on leave?
Lots of drinking. Lots of getting together and drinking and seeing the sights. Having some good food, and I guess some of the local girls were quite interesting to some blokes. But we were well looked after.
Were you sort of warned off, sort of getting too close to the locals?
Certainly, weren't warned off getting too close to the local girls.
What sorts of things were you told?
Well, I suppose we were told to take all the precautions. And, we were properly briefed on everything, really.
Being in a foreign country, there would have been foreign customs that I assume you would have to be careful of not disrupting.
Yes, there were, particularly with the Arabs. But, they weren't as aggressive then as they are now, of course. It was a different situation altogether. And, of course, it was still a British protectorate then. It wasn't Israel.
How did they see you on the whole, do you think?
I think they were pretty pleased to... Well, I think the Jewish population, of course, was very pleased to see us there. And they gave quite a lot of support. I mean, we had... three or four Jewish officers from Perth, very fine fellows, Henry Friedman and Phil Maisel, who later became a brigadier, and they were very fine chaps. And I always remember when we did go into the desert too, they were always telling them they should take off their identity discs, which had J on them, and they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't take them off. So... We were reasonably well welcomed. Even the Arabs did too. A lot of the chaps used to go and see the Arabs and talk to them. And some were even invited to go to their homes. It was a not unpleasant time. And lots of oranges, masses of oranges. Of course, like the crops of oranges, which Israel was a huge export for them, was really just finished. And you get these marvellous Jaffa oranges, and we used to have great bags of them. I must have put on about 3 stone, I think, eating all those oranges. Very fattening they are. At that stage it was all reasonable. And we got some mail from home.
What sorts of things were written in the mail? What What were they telling you about?
Oh, well, it was just really about what was on at home, really, because they're all censored, of course. And it's just really family news, what was happening at home with the family.
And your ability to send mail back?
Oh, very limited what we could say, really. You know, we could only just really personal things. And you, I mean, you could say that you'd been on leave, but you couldn't really say where you'd been. Those sort of things. But censorship was pretty heavy.
So you were being trained whereabouts? You mentioned
we were at Gaza.
Gaza.
Yeah.
What was it like to be training now in the desert as opposed to having been trained in places like Northern?
Oh, well, when we did get to the desert, it was, you know, I think the things that you think of in Tobruk is the flies and the heat. Terrific heat. And of course, fortunately, when we got to Tobruk, we had these big cement Italian dugouts, which in the fortifications we had these, which we slept in. They were full of rats and fleas, and they were dark. But it was heaven to get down there in the cool, you know, out of the heat during the day. And then, of course, at night time we did patrols.
Mm. Well, up until that point, the Allies had been doing quite well. They captured Bardia and they'd taken Tobruk.
Yes.
What was the general feeling amongst the troops about the situation up until that point?
Oh, I don't think they were particularly worried until the Germans arrived on our doorstep. Mm. And all of a sudden they were there, you know. We'd really gone there, we thought, for training. And it was far from training, of course.
Well, how were the Italians seeing at that point?
Well, the Italians, there weren't any Italians there at all. Italians are gone, because that was all cleared, you know, it was cleared up to Tobruk, so we really came into what was in Allied. Yes, they'd all gone.
There'd been a lot of captured.
Oh, yes, they'd all gone. So,
There'd been a bit of a walkover, I understand.
They were before that, yes, they were.
Why do you think that had been the case?
Because they didn't want to fight. But I don't think 90% of the Italians really wanted to be in the war. They just didn't want to. And I think the fascists, not all of them didn't fight, of course. Some of the units they did fight very well. But I think the whole thing was they were just glad to surrender and get out of it. And that's why I'm sure they just collapsed the way they did. But it just isn't an Italian's nature, I don't think, to do what the fascists were doing and wanted to do.
So you were to move up to Tobruk. Mm-hmm. What was the importance of taking hold of Tobruk?
Well, because it meant that there was a thorn in the side. He always, Rommel, then always had to keep troops to stop us breaking out. And it meant that he didn't have the troops to move down to the borders of Egypt.
But up until that time, Rommel hadn't actually made his presence felt. What was the importance of you going to Tobruk before he came in?
It was just for training, just for desert training. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then that's, as far as we were concerned, it was just for desert training. But did the powers that be know that something was going on? Because they obviously had espionage in different places. They may have known that the Germans were being shipped from across the Mediterranean to Africa, and that's possibly. And for all I know, our own commanders, you know, fellows like Colonel Lloyd may also have known that, but we didn't.